Café Rollist is your caffeinated tabletop RPG break. It started as our exclusive Patreon show, but following a survey with our supporters, I am happy now to share its most recent episode here with you. If you enjoy this show, please consider checking out our archive of 100 or so additional episodes, which are still exclusive on Patreon. Welcome to Café Rollist. My guest was just asking me for how long I've been doing this. It feels like years, centuries, actually 20 episodes we've been streaming. Ellen, care to introduce yourself to the viewers?
Hi everyone, I'm Helen Gould. I work in games as an editor and a sensitivity reader, but I also write for them. I've not done my own game yet, and possibly won't, but I've been like a writer for other people's games a lot. And you might know me from the Rusty Quill Gaming Podcast, where I play Azu, who is a 6'6" orc paladin in glowing pink armor.
So you've been playing the same character from the beginning of the Rusty Quill, because you've been asking me how long I've been doing that, but how long have you been doing that?
So the gaming podcast has been going since, I think, 2015. But one of the players had to leave because he decided to go have a kid, and we were all very disappointed. but they needed a new fourth player. So they held auditions, and I knew both Ben and Lydia, who play other characters on the show, and they recommended me. I went, we did a little one shot, and I'm still there.
Cool. Yeah, so actually the episode...
it's now 2 years.
I haven't listened that much to the Rusty Quill. I listened to it when I organized the first podcast zone, I think, to inform myself. And we've got a very serious vetting program at the podcast zone at Dragon Meat. But I tried to listen to everyone. So maybe you were not in there already. I should check another episode.
I probably wasn't, honestly. For those who don't know, Rusty Quill is also the same company that does the Magnus Archives, which is so big that I now see it like popping up on my Tumblr, like in completely unrelated events. So that's pretty cool to be part of something that's...
It's on TikTok. It's on TikTok. You got your TikTok reenactors doing the Magnus Archives. I was like, wow, that's... They made it. They really, really made it.
Yeah, it's super exciting.
What's the name of the central person in the Magnus Archive?
Johnny Sims.
Johnny, yeah, I met him a couple of times, and the first time I met him, he just sat next to me. I got a section of one of my episodes recorded with him, but he's interviewing someone with me. So we even forgot to make an introduction. So he's in there, but he's not even saying his name. And I was completely oblivious of who's that person. He's another podcaster. So what? Great. One of my ice-breaking questions for those 20 episodes under lockdown is, has the lockdown impacted your routine in any fashion? What is your routine like nowadays?
Oh, that's kind of a tricky question because, so I'm a freelancer, but I also do short-term contracts. So back in January, I got taken on for a 6-week contract, but in the middle of it, coronavirus hit, and they extended my contract. So by the time we went into lockdown, I was still with them. I was with them for like another month. But then since I left, I've been mostly sticking to my usual freelance routine in terms of getting at least 2 things done a day. I've had a big project that I've been working on, which is like 18,000 words long. It's a setting for a game being made by Draco Studios. And I've been trying to do 1,000 words on that every morning. And some days that is very hard, and some days that's very easy. And it just depends. And then the afternoons, it could be... what have I done? It could be audio editing for my... because I have a Patreon where I'm reading a book called White Fang. As like bedtime reading. I do other stuff as well.
The Jack London novel.
Yes, the one about the wolf.
When I was a kid, there was a Disney movie and it was a big hit. And I don't think anyone remembers that movie. It was like the big blockbuster advertised everywhere, with even the people would show up being the guest on French TV shows. And it would be shown in primary schools and in school trips. And, 5 years later, everybody forgot about it.
I never heard of it. I think, do I have a copy of it somewhere?
I think they made a remake, though.
My copy of it is one that I bought from my school library, because every so often they would have sales of books that nobody was checking out anymore. So they would sell them for like 50p. So it's a really old version now. It's still got my primary school's name in it.
Cool. That's awesome. They probably forced us to read the book also.
So my mornings have all been game writing, and then my afternoons have been whatever. And then every other Saturday I do recording with Rusty Quill. I've started live streaming as well. So on a Saturday or a Sunday, I've been doing a baking live stream. And I've just started streaming Deltarune on Monday evenings too.
Deltagreen though?
Deltarune. It's like the... It's made by Toby Fox, who did Undertale.
Okay.
And it's like, I wouldn't call it a sequel. It's like an alternate universe with some similar characters. And it's a really different tone. It's really interesting.
Cool. So would that mean, have you picked up any new hobby or skills in lockdown?
The live streaming. I never thought that I would be doing that, because I always had really crap laptops, and I thought there's no way these are going to be able to handle live streaming. But my last one basically started to fall apart. So I got the new one that I'm using now, and it's very beefy. So I started live streaming the cooking and baking that I was doing.
Wow.
So now I can make dough and pastry and show people as I'm doing it.
I was discussing, so I went for to run a little errand today while taking my son to the park, and I was looking for yeast and baking powder for my wife so she could bake. But I don't know if you've seen that there's been a blog post by a woman who's been doing the rounds of the internet, because she was complaining that fake bakers were holding all the yeast, and she was a real baker. She was doing it before it was the lockdown. So all of us, we should stop baking, because she was a real deal, not us.
Yes, I saw that. I was quite lucky, because I had entertained the idea of baking bread before, so I already had yeast and stuff that I just hadn't done anything with yet. So this seemed like a good time.
Yeah, we got a lot of Persophilia purchased a cardboard box full of flowers quite a while ago, but now we left like she ordered, I don't know, a dozen times 1 kilograms or something like that, and she made an order with a friend together. But now we've got probably 5 kilograms left of whole wheat, you know, varieties which are rare, and we got tired of it, and we it's like your big tin box of biscuits, and you're just left with the shortbreads at the end. We need to plow through that stock.
I need to get some plain flour. I have a couple of packets of flour in my cupboard that I don't actually know what kind of flour they are, because I got it from the Polish shop down the road. And everything is in Polish. I've got no idea. But they have pictures of bread on them, so I'm assuming they're at least, you know, wheat flour, possibly. I don't know if they're bread flour. I don't know if they're plain flour. But we'll find out. I'll experiment with them.
Okay, so better not be gluten intolerant and visit you in the next few days, because you have no mean of knowing in Polish if the flour
visit me at all, really.
That's kind of the situation. So,
yeah.
So you were saying you have no desire of doing your own game after working on so many games, being involved in so many projects. You're not tempted to have your name front and center on the cover of something?
I mean, it's not something that I've put that much thought into. Like way back over Christmas, I was thinking about maybe doing a card game. I was thinking of, how am I going to explain this? Basically, doing like a storytelling kind of game with cards, and it would be kind of like a tarot deck. Like, and you would have to tell the story depending on what card you drew.
A bit like,
I don't know.
A bit like Once Upon a Time by James Wallace, or he published it. Maybe he didn't write it. I'm not sure.
That's exactly what I was about to say, but I feel like that's probably something people have done before. So.
I mean, you give it your own twist. I'm working, so with the lockdown, I've moved a bit more seriously into developing my own game, and it's not with tarot cards and so on, but there's a, you could compare it to Once Upon a Time in terms of format, but it's more numbers which are generated by dice rolls, and numbers are attached to a statistics. So it's a parody of. People are going to be tired of me speaking of that. Do you know that? Is it in reverse? Might be in reverse.
Is that by Marie Kondo?
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. So I was handed the book several years ago, and something like 4 years ago. And I thought it was interesting, but it was also, there was a high potential for parody. Because if you were disingenuous when you were taking some sentences, I thought it could be quite hilarious. And so the game revolves around a character who's a sort of a non-corporeal being inspired by Marie Kondo, who's called Paris Gondo, and that being that being advises. Yeah, first of all, they. Abandoned their physical form and gender because one day they realized they did not spark joy to them. So now they are gender. And they advise adventurers about their inventory because they should properly pack their inventory to not only succeed in their adventures, but also have a satisfying and it's a word I keep stumbling upon. Invigorating life ahead of them. So the game is you roll the stats of objects you find, or useful they are, or encumbering they are, and or emotionally attached you are to them. And based on the numbers, the numbers are the prompts for you to create the objects. And players come up with crazy things. Like last session, someone came up with gold slippers from a dwarf king. But gold slippers, like, cast in gold. So slabs of gold. So because it had an encumbrance of 5 or 6, something like that, which is a maximum. So it were gold slippers, but they were magic and they would not make any noise. So they were very useful and they were designed by the king, the dwarf king, because he wanted to go steal food in the fridge without his mother noticing at night. And the players trade the objects and then they find out whether they survived as a group, individually, and whether they had a happy life after that. So, yeah, I'm...
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I should have you for a session. So that was my shameless plug. So your own card game, what was your twist sort of it? So just to say, you can do a new Once Upon a Time if you have your own twist. All the games, no games is fully original.
I guess that's true. Just like, there's very rare to have an idea that's fully original. I think, so here was the thing. I first started thinking about it as like some kind of, I don't know, sort of poker kind of game. Because, okay, so basically I wrote this piece of flash fiction in which there was a card game where different cards had different kinds of luck attached to them. So if you got the shipwreck, that was unlucky. but if you got the moon, that was lucky. And so you'd have to try and pair the lucky cards and get rid of your unlucky cards by passing them off to other players. But it got, the mechanics of it got really complicated. And as anyone who has played with me knows, I'm not good at mechanics and rules. And that's mainly, if I'm being honest, that's why I've stayed away from making my own game, because I'm just, I like as few rules as possible, basically. So much so that I don't even want to write my own.
That's interesting, because you seem to be going for something which is a story game / board game, and they're slightly more mechanically heavy than something like a role-playing game. So wouldn't you be more interested in creating a setting for something?
They were two really different ideas. I still wanted there to be lucky and unlucky cards, but you could use them to tell a story, or you could use them in terms of like a winning or losing thing, where like the luckiest player would win. And so you would have a certain number of each card, and you could like have different combinations of them. And there would be like different symbols on each card that would tell you what they could match with.
Okay, cool. So the effect could change.
It's been a long time since I thought about it. So I'm probably not describing it very well.
So what are you working at the moment?
So I've still got my big project for Draco Studios going on. I also have my biggest sensitivity reading project yet. Because I work with a company called Salt and Sage Books, and they specialize in editorial services. Mm-hmm. So I'm a reader for them.
Okay.
And I've got my first deep developmental edit. And it's like a historical romance, which should be fun. So I've got to go through it in like proper detail and talk about all the concepts, as well as doing a sensitivity reading of it, because there's a mixed race character in it. So I'm working on that. I'm going to be in a panel on May 30th chatting about sensitivity reading with some other people who are in that kind of industry. So I'm preparing for that. I always have the book that I'm working on. That has been very stop and start. I'm hoping maybe I will have a chance to focus on it soon. But every time I say that, something else comes up that is something that will be more profitable. So I always end up focusing on that. So that's why it keeps going on the back burner. Then there's stuff for the Patreon, and there's Rusty Quill stuff. So now I think, and there's the live streams that I'm doing. So now I think about it, I am actually quite busy. But I think just because I'm inside, I'm like, I can't be that busy, but I am actually.
Yeah, it's quite weird. You know, we bought early this year, I don't know if you've seen those diaries, because that's what they are. They are diaries. It's called One Line a Day. So there are little books like that, and you're supposed to write 4 lines every day. And when I fill them in the evening, I always thought, I haven't done much today. And then I start listing the 4 or 5 things I did. I'm like, I did a stream. I did a playtest. I typed that. I released that episode, which I edited. Yeah, it's not bad on top of taking care of my son and cooking the dinner and so on. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. But there's the element of repetition also. It's sort of make each death feel, it becomes difficult to, I don't know, time seems even shorter than usually. You know, this thing of when you look back, you're like, wow, it's been a year, wow. And now I'm like, it's been 6 months of 2020.
Yes.
it's been
so strange. Because I guess because I haven't done it like for so long now, I've not done anything that's really involved going outside. The last time I went outside was like for a doctor's appointment. And by outside for me, like I walk around in my immediate neighborhood, but like last time I got on a bus or a tube was like maybe over 2 months ago now. And that's so bizarre. It's so strange for me because I'm quite, the reason that I've been able to be, well, part of the reason I've been able to be successful as a freelancer is because I'm really good at being focused by myself, and I like my own space and I like my own company. But I could balance that with having quite an active social life. And now I don't really have that. So everything's going online. And then that's a really different kind of being tired. I saw someone having a conversation about it on Twitter where it was like, you're giving your own energy towards something, but you're not feeling it back, if that makes sense.
Like, yes, totally.
I can see you and I can hear you, but I can't touch you. I can't sense you as like a physical presence. And so our brains are like, what is this? And that it's hard to reconcile the different information.
Yeah, the only thing which has been giving back to me was playing some games with people. I found a new gaming group, and the way we played, they gave me a lot of energy. The sessions were quite intense, and each session we play a different game. So I ran my game. We tried Becoming, which is quite interesting. Last week we played a French game, which is available in English, and I recommend. It's called Sonia and Conan versus the Ninjas. And and one player plays the barbarian, who's non-gender, because technically the barbarian is both Conan and Sonia at once. One player plays the barbarian, and the three others play everybody else, the ninja. So it's the opposite of a GM-less game. It's a 3-GM game. And but I've been playing with them, and it's been feeding me a bit. Doing the playtest has been feeding me a bit, but it's also really weird how my, I don't know if it's the right word, but entourage is not entourage, like the people follow me around, but the people I engage with are completely different. I engage very little with the people I used to engage with physically. And I engage a bit more with my parents than I used to, and I engage with people who used to be perfect strangers, or people like who used to be childhood friends, but I haven't heard from in 15 years. And yeah, I'm engaging with people based on availability and intent online rather than geographical, physical availability than being around and so on. So I play with people who are in France. I engage with people who are in Belgium and my parents who are abroad, but not so much with my friends in London. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. And it's, to me, I don't think it says anything about our relationships with those people, because like everything is so weird for everyone emotionally right now. And there are those friendships where you can not talk for like a year. And then when you see them again, it's like, you just slot back in. But, I don't know. I keep thinking, oh, I should talk to this person. Oh, I should talk to that person. And then the end of the day comes and I have free time and I'm like, I'm too tired. I'm so tired. Like I can't, it's so strange being like worn out by socialization. Even though you've not met anyone.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Especially with people that I usually game with.
It's also,
because that's really,
sorry. It's also, I think that there's an aspect of what do you call that? It's not necessarily random, but you know, the opportunities. Physically, normally you engage with people based on opportunities, because you show up in a place where they show up too, or you work in the same area and you run into each other. You know, you don't take a commitment. You're more like, hey, what are you up to? I'm in the neighborhood. You want to do something? And, oh, let's have lunch together. And I found out that other people I engage with, and again, perfect strangers. First, it was with Francita, who I pretty much don't know. She's a graphic designer from Chile. She's been working with Olivia Hill, I believe, on High End, and she just posted on Twitter, I'm working on something graphic design, I'm gonna be in my chat room in my Discord, whoever wants to come hang out, come over and hang out. And I went there, and there were other people, and we just chatted like that, like you would run into people in a pub. And now I started doing it sometimes when I edit on my Discord. I leave the chat room open and people just show up. But like, hey, who are you? Oh, you're that person. Oh, how are you doing? I never chatted with you, and so on. But you got this aspect of not having to, okay, tonight you're going to take an appointment with my best friend to have this meaningful time at 7:30 p.m. exactly till 9 p.m. It's too, you cannot really, make that happen on demand. It's not the same. It's like spontaneity. It's difficult to create spontaneity online this way, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know, but for me, I'm starting to need to schedule things in to sort of be able to check in with people, because I think at the minute, like, my work is giving me quite a lot of structure, and if something is not built into my work structure, then it just falls by the wayside. So I'm finding it difficult to take part in things that are spontaneous. Apart from, like, Discord stuff. I'm in the official Rusty Quill Discord with all of our fans. That's always really fun to, like, because they're always, they theorize so much more about the podcast than I do. For me, I'm just like, yeah, that happened. And then they're like, oh, but what if this is actually linked to this from way back in episode 12? And then this is this. And they've got all their red string everywhere. And I'm just like,
That must be so weird to play something and you have this background team of people who are thinking about your character and what you're doing in between sessions. Yeah. It's like you just said something in passing and then they work out a theory, or I guess just having a joke catching up and having people discuss it again and again. That must be something.
I mean, yeah, it's weird, but for me, it's not weird in a bad way at all. At first, it was a bit of a surprise, but now as time has gone on and I've seen how much the things that I intend as sort of quite throwaway lines, how much people can be like, "Ooh, what does this mean?" And it's made me actually start thinking a lot more about my character and sort of thinking out about like scenarios that I think are going to come up and how she's going to react and stuff like that. So I think being aware of having such an active audience has actually made me a better player / actor.
Yeah, you do a performance. When I'm asked about podcasting and so on, what I try to tell people, especially doing actual play, they got an extra player in the room, and that's the audience, and they need to perform for them as well. They need to create opportunity of stuff to enjoy. It's not selfless, but yeah, it needs to be generous, I guess, the way you role play.
Yeah, and something interesting that Lydia has said before is that because the way that we play it, it's us, the players, chatting as well as the characters, so we swap in between. But when we chat as the players, it's still a bit of a performance. I'm sort of performing as out of character Helen as well as my character. I'm not sure, like Lydia would explain this a lot better, but it's like I am still different even when I'm just chatting on the podcast than I am in real life, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. I do sometimes actual play. But most of what I do is interviews, discussion. But, I mean, I even have the name I take, I introduce myself online and so on, is Callum. It's a persona. It's a persona I have for the podcast. Yeah. And it's not quite, I mean, in a way, I guess Callum is slightly more defined than Jeremy, because Jeremy is whatever I am and whatever mood I am in when I'm doing something. And I'm very different at work. I would be even very different on certain projects compared to others, or at one employer compared to another. And I'm different for friends I used to have at uni, friends when I was in high school in Belgium, friends I'm with now. But Callum sort of have a few things is there for me, like it's supposed to be more positive. So when I'm in a Callum situation, it can be live front at a live event, but when I'm the organizer and so on, I got a switch going on in my head saying, okay, you're Callum, so you're not you're not gonna get mad about, let's say, the political situation. You might, you know, that doesn't mean I forget my opinions and so on, or I'm not shy about my opinions, but Kalum doesn't get upset, sort of. So yeah. It's sort of my persona, and it's kind of soothing and relaxing to have that persona for me. So yeah, you always have that. And I think also people do it. It's not just a performance thing. I think when you show up within a group, you adopt different persona because you try to assess what this group is about. So you try to adapt yourself for that. So have you ever had the experience? You got like your birthday coming. And I had that especially when I was studying architecture, and you got your group of friends from high school. In my case, we did theater and role playing games together. And then I have my friends from uni who smoke drugs with, you know, they're more artists and so on. And then I got my birthday party. I'm having it at my grandmother's house. It's a big barbecue. I invite everybody. And suddenly you got the two groups come together and you're sort of torn in between because the image they have with you. What they called me was different. I had a nickname which was different with one and the others. It's kind of tearing you apart in terms of experience. So you do that. People do that. They just don't realize it.
Personality is performative, depending on who you're with, and I think that's not a bad thing, and that's not to say that any part of like who you are with different people is fake. It's just that different people bring out different things in you, and when it comes to performing in front of an audience, it's like that thing about how, I don't know if it's quantum physics or whatever, I'm not a scientist, but when you look at certain atoms, the act of you looking at them makes them change.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it's like. Yeah.
Yeah, you got that in nature that also.
I think
it's a good call. Personality is performative. And as you say, it's not lying or being deceitful. It's just different facets of your personality which finds a way to
bouncing off different people. I'm a very different person if I'm with like say I'm in like two different gaming groups. I tend to play completely different characters depending on who I'm with. Like one group is like more sort of gaming focused and the other group is full of improv comedians. So I have I'm acting to different expectations and there are completely different vibes in both of those rooms. So I am going to be different in both ways.
Do you also like, because I found that it's not the case of all the tabletop RPG fans. I'm not always successful at it, but I like to attempt to play characters who are very different, to explore very different things, play a cleric obsessed with his religion and who's kind of not picking up on social clues, or on the opposite, playing someone who's the face of a group, like, I don't know, in a Shadowrun, so who's very good with social things, and playing someone nice, playing someone very lawful, someone very chaotic. Do you like to go across the range like that, or do you have your things where you got your comfort and you prefer to sort of stick to them?
I mean, I have two main sort of archetypes for who I play. Like, one of them is the character I play in Rusty Quill, Azu, who's like, you know, good with a capital G and, you know, means well and tries to do her best. And then I've got characters that I play in other games where I'm just absolutely awful. I like to play assassins and like angry people and people who like hit things hard. But it's very different when it comes to a one shot, because with one shots, I don't really mind if my character survives or not, so I just go all out. So, and that I think that can be really fun because you discover things that you can play that you didn't think you could before. So one of the one shots on the podcast, I ended up playing like this terrible poet who was sleeping around a cruise ship. Like, And that's not a character that I would automatically think I would play. But in that room and with that game and with those people, I was like, yes, that's who I'm going to be. And it was loads of fun. So it's a bit of both. I tend to either be really nice or really horrible. And then if I know that I'm not going to be sticking around, I just do whatever.
It's quite liberating, a one-shot.
Yes.
When you have a one-shot, you don't have to care about the consequences too much. And you're in a stressful position with the game master. It's great to lose yourself into somebody else.
Yeah, and just be like, well, why not do this? I remember the first time I played a Cthulhu game, and I was pretty sure that like our characters weren't going to survive, and that gave me a certain amount of freedom to just do whatever I wanted, because I was like, well, doesn't matter. I really enjoyed that. I think that was a Cthulhu Dark game that I played first.
There's a game I would like to play again. I really like the concept. So it's called Becoming, and you need four players. It's got similarities with the other game I was describing, but so one player plays the hero and will just play the hero, and the other three role players play each a fate, but they take turn with the different fates. And yeah, I mean, it's a classical fate. So the three of them have different roles, but when you're playing one of the fate on one turn, you play one of the role and then you switch with the others. But what's interesting is that the hero will succeed. The hero, they will survive. But the point of the game, it's called, the designer calls it a drama generator. You are supposed to make the hero suffer. And as a fate, what you're supposed to come up with is difficult choices. Like, okay, this is gonna damage the starship you're on in a very serious way, or you're gonna lose a member of your crew, or you're gonna lose one member of your crew, this one or this one. Which one is it gonna be? But what's nice is that because the agreement is that the hero will succeed. Yeah, it can be very hard at the same time, but you don't have to worry too much about, oh, I don't want to lose the game. You're going to win the game, but the idea is that you will suffer at it.
So that's something that's really interesting to me, the idea of winning or losing in a role-playing game. Like, it's not really... I don't know, I find that can be quite problematic. Because people will try and, even if that's not the purpose of the game, and obviously it depends on what you're playing, but when you get players who want to win, that can lead to like such railroady tactics sometimes. Not just by the GM, but by other players as well. They're like, well, I'm going to go and do this, and they end up going somewhere by themselves, and you're forced to go along with it or not. And
yeah, there's kind of a balance to find, and again, it's a question of trust. I already mentioned on this show, so I joined a campaign with friends from childhood. I hadn't played with them for 15 years, and I joined a campaign with them, and I found out, and I guess in a way it's a judgment, but they're having fun, so they're not doing anything wrong with the way they play role-playing games. But I was not having fun, and part of that was because I found they were still playing role-playing games as we played in the late 90s. And it's quite weird. It's a weird sort of, it's not railroady. It's more sandboxy, but at the same time, things are very set in the mind of the game master. He's got this logic of what would work and what would not work. And and as the player in those tables, you're supposed to work out what's their logic. And it's exhausting. And if you do things which don't align with the logic of the game master, with that specific game master, you just get slapped in the face repeatedly. Which, to some extent, to add on top of things, is sort of the point with his tables. because what he digs is, and even if those showed up later, it's stuff like Game of Thrones, things which are dark. And I just left the campaign because I was, not only there was an issue of the thing being downbeat, rather than being downbeat, upbeat, investigative beat, action beat. But also I realized that when I was at the table, I was very stressed because I was thinking very hard what was the right thing to do rather than the narrative, you know, the thing which makes sense for my character. And so, and not only me, but when I would see other players doing stuff, me and the other players would stress over what that player was doing rather than let that player do her or his thing. And it's just, it's not fun. We're supposed to play FBI agents coming first of their class out of the academy. And your first session is, okay, operation of rescuing someone kidnapped. And you smashed completely your team because guess what? I wasn't trained in hostage rescue. and it doesn't feel like the game master is not exactly against us, but it doesn't feel like he's a fan of the characters. You know, he's not, oh, you did that thing. That wasn't very smart to do. Bam. This consequence happened to you rather than be like, yeah, but you wouldn't write the character failing. I mean, you don't show Silence of the Lamb the first time you see Clarice Starling. She doesn't hit her head on a door or something like that. So you could still, you know, that's the thing. Not winning the game, but if you feel like you're losing or that you got stuff to lose, it's hard to lose yourself again in the role and in the story rather than concentrate on, okay, what's the logic here? What's the logic thing to do?
I'm really lucky that I've never had a GM make me feel like that, really. Because, I mean, there's also, like, you said that you were stressed about your decisions, but there's, like, there's good stress and bad stress. And so, like, the stress I enjoy is where I'm like, oh, no, what will happen? But the bad stress is where you're like, have I made the right choice? Like, where it's about you rather than the game and the character. I mean, what do you think makes a good GM?
Oh, I think it's, you know, I don't like the debate about what a game should or should not be in terms of should it be railroady, should it be sandboxy, should it be even question about whether or not racism has its place in a story. I don't think there's a set answer for that. But I think a good GM listens. That doesn't mean he cannot be railroady in what he does, but he listens and make things align with what is going on. So he is reactive. So that doesn't mean not having something very linear or predetermined. One of the best game I had was a Call of Cthulhu game with Joe Trier from All Reroll Podcast. And it was a very linear story, but it was great actually because we didn't have to, again, thinking of other games of Call of Cthulhu when I played Mask of Nyarlathotep, we were like thinking very hard. Oh, we don't know where the investigation is supposed to be going. Are the clues we're supposed to pick up? I mean, it's fine for one session, but several sessions, it's a bit hard. But because that one was very linear, we were completely available for being our characters and me to concentrate on being the divorced father of a child who disappeared, having to bend with the new husband of his wife to find the child who disappeared in a camping trip. And I was all into this character who was a construction worker, who was insecure. The other guy was more white collar. And he was very proud of his kid. My character would always say, well, my kid is smart. She's smart, you know. And, you know, you go into that and you develop the relationship between you and the other characters and you're not there to be, oh, I missed my investigation role, or I didn't connect the dot in the story. No, it was just you go to the encampment, you find someone, you follow a trail, and then you find the children, you realize what's going on, it's weird and doesn't make sense, and you try to react with emotion of what it's like to have a father who find his child possessed and he just wants to save her. And I wouldn't play that all the time, but you know, it's nice. That's something I like. But that doesn't mean the, and again, it was linear, but that doesn't mean the game master was not listening to what we were saying and giving us hooks to give him more of that, giving more energy and make it rebound. But so, yeah, I guess that, yeah.
Yeah.
Listening.
Like, I don't think it's ever a problem of how much or how little structure a game has. I think it's so much more about the GM's relationship with the players, in my experience. Like, I could do any kind of like A to B campaign and not care as long as I'm having fun. And I think that's... it sounds like the worst games are where people forget that you're meant to be enjoying it.
Yeah, yeah. That's the weird thing with that game master. And again, he's running games maybe three times a week, and his tables are full. Me, when I run tables, sometimes I struggle to have players. So he's probably doing something much better, at least for his audience, than I'm doing. But yeah, it's like he puts the integrity of some element of the plot or the logic of his world above the fun and the enjoyment of the player. Even the integrity will matter most than the survival of the campaign. I've seen that. Like, yeah. My first session with him was like that. Star Wars, one player decides to go to a ball where Darth Vader is, and we are a resistant group going there. Ooh. And yeah, so, I mean, you could have that on campaign podcast or any Star Wars podcast, Redemption, and it becomes a scene which is very interesting. But in the logic of the game master, it meant, no, we were not discreet enough. That was very nonsensical to do that, especially when one of the character was exceptionally gorgeous, so she got noticed at the ball. And we all ended up in a imperial jail, tortured or interrogated. And they found out who we were and what we were about, and the campaign was killed. TPK. And the game master was the game master was also convinced that he was being generous, because the interrogation was taking place in front of one another. So we knew that even when an imperial would tell us, well, your friends, they gave away the secret. We knew they didn't. But that combined, plus a player who was the one who initiated the ball, who was a push the red button player, when he was getting bored or not having fun, he would push the button and destroy everything around him. The player just said, no, I give it away. I said all our secrets to the Imperial agent, and the campaign was killed. My very first session with that game master, because... Oh yeah, no. In my logic, going to the ball would mean that you immediately captured by the Empire. So yeah, okay, okay.
Yeah.
Do you master yourself?
Occasionally, very occasionally. So I tend to, the last couple of times I've done it, I've put so much thought into like the NPCs and stuff, but I've never, in terms of where the actual game is going, I've had like a beginning, a middle, and an end, and everything else I've just left up to the players. The first time I tried that, it was a Monster Hearts game, and that was vaguely in line with what I thought was going to happen, at least. That there was some, I mean, I wasn't prepared at that time for how much players can surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was this one character who was like my exposition box, and I was trying to play him like, you know, like someone interesting. They should, you know, that could tell them loads of information, and they all hated him, and like and like put him in a cupboard and left him there. And I was like, your information. that was fun, and then. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think one of the excitements about being a games master is giving up so much of the control to your players, because I'm never going to tell someone, no, you can't do that. Like, unless I've got like an actual proper reason for it. Like, some very occasionally, Alex and the Rusty Quill will say, please don't do this because, and then he'll explain how it would absolutely break his world or something like that, and then that's fine. But, you know, I would never sort of kill a load of characters because, unless there's no way out of it, really. I try to avoid killing characters.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. It was funny playing with that game master because I even know the game master of that game master. So I played with the game master who sort of brought him in the hobby, and I could tell there had some similarities. And playing with him again made me realize, because he was my first game master, there are things I did which was a bit like that. So again, it's not a criticism of the way he's doing things. Again, his players are having fun. I was the one not having fun. But it made me realize, oh, wait a second. When he does that, he does that, he does that. And personally, it's not to my taste. That's something I did to other player. And I know it was not to their taste. So it's interesting to have, to shed the light on something.
I mean, it's all a learning curve. I think that as long as everyone's having fun, then there's no good or bad way to do it. I think everyone's got their own style.
Yeah.
So much of the success of a game depends on the people who are in the group.
Definitely.
It's like...
There's a lot of, you know, advice for game masters and question what's good or bad game mastering. We were having a short discussion with Misdirected Mark podcast about the fact that they're considering producing more advice for players, but the question is whether or not the players will go to and consume that advice. But players have a job to do. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if the game master is listening if the players are not saying much or saying stuff which before they themselves did not listen to what was going on and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in general there's a problem where people sort of seem to see the game as like belonging to the game's master, but it actually belongs to everyone who's at the table. And I think it's everyone's responsibility to take care of each other.
Yeah, that's the thing. If it belongs to someone, it means you need to take care of it. It's not just an ownership thing, it's a responsibility thing. You're responsible. Everyone is responsible for the fun of everyone around the table.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a major thing.
it's often missed.
I did a sensitivity reading of a game that's coming out soon, and it had a little section in it that was sort of, because it's a GM-less game, it said something like everyone should be a fan of everyone else's character, like you should all want them to do like interesting, exciting things, and you know, like give them opportunities to be cool. And I think that was a really good point that writer made.
I think that's why it's nice to play. I'm not the biggest fan of GM-less games, but I think they are a very invaluable experience to have, even once in a while, to you know hone that ability to listen to one another, you know, to cultivate that, to then go to a quotation mark classic role playing game.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think I'd like to try more GM-less games. I don't have like a major preference one way or the other, because I think there are pros and cons to both. But I've only tried like three. I'm still quite behind, I feel, because I only started getting involved in tabletop gaming in like 2014. So for me, it's not been as long for me as for lots of other people who are in the hobby.
I mean, you always find people who had more experience and people who had less experience. It's there's just so much going on, and again, it's even in terms of, it's a question of curiosity. You could have been playing for, I mean, I had someone come with a big rant. I think it was the first person I ever blocked from my page on Facebook. I just posted an announcement that Chaosium was to publish a French game in English. It's called Worm, and you play a prehistory characters. And that person posted like 1986 is calling and they want this stupid idea back. And with a cover of GURPS, a prehistorical setting for GURPS, official GURPS thing. And then tongue-in-cheek, just to try to ease him up, I was like, well, I wouldn't say GURPS was such a bad idea from the 80s. And he just, replied so hardly. And I was like, you know, ideas can be badly treated or taken, so maybe the idea wasn't good in that supplement you read, but it might be good in that new game. And he was like, well, I never actually read that book. It was just sitting on a shelf in the shop where we were playing in the 80s. And me and all the other players would point at it regularly and laugh. And he was like, why, you're not going to teach me role-playing games? I've been playing since the mid-70s. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, my God.
Why are you getting so excited about this thing you dislike? So, yeah, okay, right. Bye. You're not welcome.
Yeah.
But that person's been playing since the mid-70s. And, yeah, I dare say, I mean, if he's having fun, he's doing it right. But he doesn't seem to be having that much fun. So maybe you should try new things. I mean, even to find out that it's not his cup of tea, but it was wow.
It's that thing where, like, when someone gets too much into a hobby, like so much that it becomes their identity, they start to take all kinds of things super personally. And I think it's one of those problems with, like, fandom in general that, you know, over the last couple of years have become more and more apparent, where if something happens in their franchise or game or whatever that they don't like, just absolutely go off the rails because they see it as like a personal attack on them. And I think that there's that kind of thing happening in sort of like rival gaming camps sometimes.
I think also,
like, for example, I would never say that Dungeons and Dragons is my favorite game. And I definitely think it has flaws and stuff, but I would never yell at someone for playing it, you know?
Yeah, I keep saying stuff about Dungeons and Dragons. I keep saying I like Dungeons and Dragons and then come up with criticism, but yeah, I'm not yelling at people. Why yell? It's frustrating. I guess you've seen, like, everybody. It's frustrating how people signal boost something they dislike. Even if they're against it, they will still signal boost it. And I was so frustrated. I'm so frustrated. There's so many good shows. And hopefully mine is one of them to some extent. But it's so difficult to have people share the stuff you do and say, oh, you should listen to that. Even when you see the numbers, and say, oh, there's that many people doing it. It's very impressive. You got something like the Rustic Wheel or the Magnus Archive who reach sort of this critical mass of fans. And they got these qualities which make that fans do go out and recommend what they do. But I was very annoyed by what happened with Miss Monopoly, because everybody, I don't know if you've seen that. Were you lucky?
Is that an Animal Crossing
no,
character or something?
No, it's an adder. And I think
I just saw a meme. I think I saw a meme where someone put Miss Monopoly in Animal Crossing. So I saw a picture of her, but I don't know what that's about or what it is.
Well, it was an ad, and maybe I'm paranoid, but I think it was intended to trigger people from the publicist. But it's a very long ad. So picture an ad for, like, Microsoft or something like SAP, something very corporate, lushly filmed. And you see little girls and they work in a garage assembling something. And it's super, you know, this very American corporate, well shot, raising the tension and the emotion, saying what's going on with those little girls making inventions, and you don't know what the product is till the very, very end. And at the very, very end, those three or four little girls, several of them being from minorities, they got this big box present and then unwrap it, and inside it, it's a new Monopoly called Miss Monopoly, which is specially for women, and it's got special rules in it, and it's it's very cringy.
Yeah, that hits me as like that Bic pen for women.
And if you tell the whole story, because some people defended it to me saying, okay, but you do know that because it's been cut from the edit, which has been shared in the box, there were $2,000 for them to work on their invention. But it's Miss Monopoly.
That's not the point of it.
Yeah, that's not the point.
That's a company being like fake woke.
Yeah.
They're going to tap into that market.
Especially after doing Millennials Monopoly and so on. But what really annoys me is that everybody shared it. I had zero interest in it. And I've seen it, not only people working in tabletop, but like my favorite vloggers posted it, like people like Lindsay Ellis, podcasts, which are absolutely not about tabletop. It was everywhere for 2 days. And everywhere with 90% of the people sharing, saying, look at this thing. Are you for real? Is this thing real? That's so stupid. That's so insulting. Yeah, but everybody was still sharing it. Why don't you share, I don't know, a Haunted West or something positive, something you want to support instead of signal boosting something? Because the publicist, at the end of the day,
they still got the money.
Great job! they can say, hey, we made that campaign everybody heard of. And we can tell to our client, look, 3 million retweets on Twitter, even if it's 90% people haters. It's just this cultural thing of... Yeah, discussing more stuff
it's
we don't like.
It's outrage clicks. It's a whole thing. Like, so many newspapers will post a headline that they know is going to rile people up and get them to share it, being like, I can't believe they said this. Ugh. It's a nightmare.
Anything left from you positive to share, and maybe your goodbye, because it's going to be time for me to wake up my son.
Oh. Then I would say, if anyone's interested in sensitivity reading, if they're writing a book or a game or anything like that, come along to the panel that we're having. That's May 30th, 7:30, and it's being hosted by Welcome to the Party. I believe their Twitter is Welcome Party RPG. And we're going to have about an hour chatting about what it is, when you should get a sensitivity reader, stuff we come across, that kind of thing.
I think it's hosted by a friend of the show, Paulina, from the London RPG community also.
Yeah, she's moderating.
Yeah, but she's moderating. But,
because it's on Twitch, we got a sensitive tutor called Leona Maple is part of Welcome to the Party. And so she was like, we can just go there. There'll be a nice little crossover. So that's what we did.
Cool. I love crossovers like that. I try to to tune in. I don't watch that many Twitch shows. I consume things more in audio. I stream more than I watch things. Anyway, where can people find you if you wish to be found?
Oh, come follow me on Twitter. That's at Alecto101. That's Alecto101. And I post about everything I'm doing there.
What is
at the minute, it's Hannibal.
What is Alecto, actually?
She is one of the Furies that helped to start the Trojan War.
Oh, nice. Nice. Nothing like
because
the Trojan.
I'm a classics nerd.
I love classics. I should have you for a game of Nephilim. I'll send you an episode I recorded about that French game. It starts as Troy is burning, so it's a historical game. I send you a link, you tell me what you think of it. Well, thank you so much for joining, Helen. We should interact more often than once in a while when you happen to be seated next to me at Dragon Meet. I think that's what we had to, like, it must be our third interaction, one set in Phoenix event, once Dragon Meet, maybe twice Dragon Meet. So yeah, we should do more stuff together.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks everyone who tuned in.
Thank you.
And cheers. Bye. Wednesday I will be having with my guest Paco from GMS Magazine, a fellow tabletop vlogger from Spain. So yeah, should be cool. Thanks. Bye.
Bye everyone.
4Logo is designed by Rolin Kunz,
Our theme song is Playtime by Jazar, which you can download on the Free Music Archive. A video version of this episode is available on YouTube. Please consider subscribing to our channel there. Leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you would like more Café Rollist, you can also get access to our archive of 100 or so additional episodes via Patreon. If you want to be informed of everything released by the Rollist, we have a monthly newsletter for you to join. And if you want to contribute via the chat room to one of our recordings, subscribe to our Twitch channel and social media accounts to be informed of when streams are happening. Finally, links to everything I just mentioned can be found in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening to us, and remember, you are the Rollist.